Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This year has gone by incredibly quickly, but it's always nice to pause and take stock. What's something you're proud of in 2024 so far? What's something you still want to accomplish this year? I know I'm guilty of falling into a routine and not always thinking about the bigger picture. But as the great Ferris Bueller once said, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it. So it's crucial to take a moment to celebrate your wins and make adjustments for the rest of the year. Therapy can help you contextualize your progress and set achievable goals for the next 6 months. As you surely know by now, it's not only for people who have experienced major trauma. Therapy is helpful in all kinds of ways, including learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. If you've been considering trying therapy, check out BetterHelp. It's fully online and was specifically designed to be flexible and customizable to your schedule. To get started, just fill out a brief questionnaire that matches you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the 2024 summer movie season at the box office. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, it has been a while since we've done a full-blown box office-centric episode of the podcast, and I'm hoping that we're going to be able to get back to doing that at some point next week. But straight up, like, some of the future of that depends on a situation that just popped up at your apartment, right?
Yeah. So I apologize about last week for not being here, gang. I had some car problems and some other stuff that got in the way. So I sincerely apologize. But this week, it turns out we got a notice very late on Saturday from our apartment complex that there is like a bunch of construction that's going to be going on for at least 3 weeks and possibly as long as 3 months. And my office at my inside of my apartment is literally the closest thing to the construction. Like, I could not be in a worse spot. Ben and I were trying to figure this out earlier to make sure we could do it, and I couldn't even like focus on what he was saying. It was so loud. So I've sort of come up with a reasonable enough solution. But if you guys hear anything in the background while I'm talking or anything like that. Just know that that's kind of what the deal is. And that'll be for the next few weeks, obviously. So, you know, we'll continue to do the box office episodes, but it just, you might have to deal with some clanking in the background.
Yes, yes. Fingers crossed it's not too disruptive and that you retain your sanity, Ryan. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I'll do my best on that second part, but no promises.
Okay. So in previous years, Peter Serretta would recruit you for a big preview episode as we headed into the summer movie season, partially as research for his appearances on the Summer Movie Wager episode over at the Filmcast. If you listen to this show and you don't listen to the Filmcast, I would highly recommend checking them out. They're great. They started out as a slash film podcast years ago and spun off into their own thing. It's been my favorite podcast forever. I believe our pal BJ Colangelo is going to be a guest on their Summer Movie Wager episode, which is coming up pretty soon. So all of that to say that the Summer Movie Wager is primarily focused on predicting the domestic box office numbers for summer blockbusters. But since neither of us, Ryan, are actively participating in that this year, I think we're going to widen the canvas a little bit and focus primarily on global numbers.
Yeah, Peter used to get frustrated at me because that's where my focus is. I am not super domestic focused. Like, it is important. Like, the domestic box office is very important because, you know, it, particularly for movies people care about outside of China, like, North America is the most important market for films. But like, the global number is really the thing. So it was tough for me to focus narrowly on domestic. But so I'll try to give the fuller picture as we go here. But I, anyone who's read my stuff probably knows that I focus pretty heavily on, like, the bigger picture.
Yeah. Okay. So I think what we're going to do is just dive into the summer. And for our purposes, we're going to define this year's summer movie season as starting this Friday, May 3rd, with the release of The Fall Guy. And then we were actually going to cut off, like, right around, I think it's the first end of August, first week of September, with Kraven the Hunter. But as of this morning, I think, or maybe late yesterday, that movie got moved to December of this year. So that is no longer going to be the final film that we're going to talk about in this episode. So we'll catch up to that point a little bit later on and figure out what the, I guess, the official end of summer movie is going to be. But Ryan, let's kick things off here. Let's start talking about The Fall Guy. What do you think about, I guess, this movie and its prospects and sort of some comps? And what are you thinking about this film?
Yeah, so The Fall Guy is, you know, for all intents and purposes, the first, it's usually that first weekend of May, because that will sort of dovetail into when kids get out of school, whatever. So, look, I've seen The Fall Guy. I think it's an excellent movie. Genuinely, it's great. Our own Jacob Hall is incredibly high on it. It's peak charm, Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt at her best, great ensemble, very fun, good movie. And I think for whatever you might think about David Leitch as a filmmaker, this actually feels like an oddly personal film to him, given that he came from the world of stuntmen. So I think people are going to like this movie. Mm-hmm. But however, tracking right now is kind of looking, I think we're getting updated tracking today, but it's looking at around 35 or 40 million, and that's on the optimistic end. Now, that's not necessarily terrible, but there's two things to remember. One, it's got a $125 million budget. Especially if it underperforms and comes in below those, you know, tracking, that's not good for Universal. Like, that's not what you necessarily want for a movie that expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you're sort of relying on overseas and all these other things. And another thing is to remember, this is the beginning of summer. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, okay, so what's happened in years prior, right? Like, what are we looking at? And truthfully, you know, that's way below what we were at last year, because, you know, last year we had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 opening to $118 million on May 5th. You know, so that's a very different situation to find yourself in. And, you know, that movie ended up legging out $845 million worldwide, $358 domestic. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Fall Guy, even under the best of circumstances, can't do that.
Yeah, it's interesting that Universal is positioning this as sort of like the official summer kickoff movie, which is like typically what, you know, a Marvel movie has served that function for a long time, like many, many years now. I guess barring some of the pandemic stuff that happened like 2020, 2021, whatever. But I don't know if you are on like Universal's press list, Ryan, but my inbox is just like, it feels like constantly being filled with, hey, here's a new featurette for The Fall Guy. Like, it honestly feels like the studio is treating it as if it is on the same level as a Marvel movie. And I think, I mean, just the fact that they brought it to South by Southwest and it had, you know, sort of a raucous reception there, they clearly are high on this movie, the studio, and they know that they have a genuine crowd pleaser on their hands. So I'm wondering what you think about the idea of this movie maybe opening slightly below expectations, but having potentially such good word of mouth that it becomes like the movie of the summer, just almost by default, given the rest of the stuff that we're going to be talking about here.
That is sincerely my hope. It's a good movie. Like, it is a good movie. And like, yes, it is technically a franchise movie because The Fall Guy is a TV show, but I talked about this in my box office preview piece for it, that like, as far as the general public is concerned, particularly younger people, they don't even know what The Fall Guy is. They have no idea that it's based on a TV show, and they're not advertising it that it's based on a TV show. So it's really playing like an original action blockbuster for the general public that is predicated on, you know, hey, you like Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and action movies, then you will like to go see this movie. Mm-hmm. So my sincere hope is that, yeah, people go see it, people love it, people talk about it, it can leg out. We'll talk about more why that might get tricky here in a bit, but, you know, that's the hope. I think even before the pandemic, you would have these movies that were really well received that would have a tough time doing that. I think of Booksmart as a very classic example of that, this movie that everyone seemed to love that just could not find, you know, its theatrical audience. And so, you know, this is obviously a bigger movie, but, you know, we'll see. I certainly don't want to be negative if I'm wrong, and we've seen examples of tracking being way off. Even Godzilla X Kong recently, you know, tracking was way below what it ended up doing. So, you know, here's hoping, but no matter what, it's not getting to that 118 million we kicked off the summer with last year. And so we're already kind of off to a slightly slower start. And just so people understand, part of the reason I'm a little like, oh no, is that the first third of the year, ticket sales were down 21% compared to 2023. Mm-hmm. And we were still not near, you know, pre-pandemic levels last year. So, you know, the box office is in desperate need of some help here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you and I were talking before we started recording about how that kind of puts this whole summer in like an unfair position of trying to kind of make up some of that ground that the first part of the year lost. And it's like, that's a tough ask for any movie summer, but especially this movie summer, which is like plagued with some of the delays. I mean, we were just talking about that with Craven that happened. And then also, you know, just the overall slate is maybe not as strong as it could have been given some of the strikes and, you know, the after effects of the strikes last year. So
100%. But like one thing that might help here, and I don't want to talk too much about this, but there is that Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace re-release on the same weekend. And there is like palpable excitement for that from younger folks who grew up as prequel fans. And I think we could be looking at a situation like, you know, where we had the 1997 re-releases. Now, I'm not saying it's going to make as much money as those did, but it looks like that could actually goose the box office for a solid, you know, anywhere between 7 days and 13 days, depending on how long Disney keeps it in theaters. So that could be helpful.
Okay. Just to speak to what I was talking about earlier, Ryan, one more piece of proof here. Literally, as we were discussing, you know, 1 minute ago, I just got another email from Universal saying Ryan Gosling surprises fans at the Fall Guy Stuntacular pre-show at Universal Studios Hollywood. So like even the theme parks are getting in on
That was all over Twitter this weekend. Yeah, people were like, because him and David Leitch showed up and I mean, look, I give nothing but credit to Universal for one, making a great movie. Like, I genuinely think it's a great movie and I think people are gonna love it, and two, like really putting their weight behind this thing. Like they're giving it an honest shot. So I have nothing but respect for that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think I'm going to see it on Wednesday night. They're doing like a little preview screening in my area. So check your local listings. You may not have to wait until Thursday to check it out if you're looking forward to it as much as I am. Tarot, Ryan, that's a horror movie that, as far as I know, is still slated for this Friday as well. This one was kind of like shuffling around the release calendar a little bit. I think you and I might be looking at slightly different release calendar sources, websites, and stuff like that. So tell me if I say anything
Tarot,
that doesn't match up with what
Tarot is currently still, so far as I can tell, due to hit theaters on May 10th. And to put it mildly.
Oh, it's May 10th. Okay. All right. Yeah. So
Is it May 10th? I'm sorry. Yeah. That's what I'm here. Let me double check because that movie has moved a couple of times.
Yeah. It switched. I don't know. The last I saw that it was like, it was May 10th and then it got pushed back to May 3rd. But I'm sitting here thinking about it now and like, that's this week. And I just haven't really seen, I mean, talking about Universal doing a great marketing push for the Fall Guy.
Sony's latest trailer seems to indicate May 3rd. Wow. Okay. I guess it is. Well, all right. So look, I mean, if it is, here's my thing. May 3rd, May 10th, it hardly matters because the advertising for it has just been so minimal.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Sony's just dumping what they're like, maybe they're not confident in the movie, but I can't imagine it doing more than a handful of million dollars, mm-hmm. you know, like it just doesn't have any juice. It's not going to be like a black phone situation, you know, like that. So I don't know. We need to dwell on that, but that's not really going to be super helpful, I don't think.
Yeah. All right. So the next big one is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is May 10th, I believe.
It is.
So yeah, what are you thinking about this one especially in terms of like comps with the previous movies? And that was, you know, those films were a while ago now, that most recent trilogy, it's been like several years. And so now we're heading back into ape world. And I wonder what you think about this movie's financial prospects.
Well, Ben, I think this movie's going to make $5 billion because I think it looks amazing.
Seem slightly biased, Ryan.
I was even avoiding the most recent trailer for this movie, and it's played in front of the last couple movies I've seen, and I get like goosebumps thinking about the trailer. Like, I am so in on this movie, I can't even begin to tell you. But I do think it has the potential to play like Rise of the Planet of the Apes or War for the Planet of the Apes. And just to give people some context, Rise of the Planet of the Apes in 2011 opened at $54 million, ended up making 176 domestic, 305 international, 481 worldwide. Now what the industry is hoping for is that this ends up playing more like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which was one of the biggest breakout sequels of all time. So as I mentioned, Rise made 481 worldwide. Dawn ended up making 710 million worldwide. And that was a huge international gross, 502 million. So it only made like 30% of its money domestically. But, mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. I mean, that you could make an argument that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is up there with like The Dark Knight, as far as like one of the biggest jumps from predecessor to sequel, as far as like quality, reception, money goes. So I don't think that we can look at this as like a Dawn of the Planet of the Apes unless things go insanely well. Mm-hmm. But I do think somewhere between that $405 million range is possible. I've seen early tracking indicating somewhere in a $50 million-ish opening weekend range, which would be totally fine. I imagine Disney would be happy with that. But, you know, as we're talking about, like, these movies might make enough money individually to be successes, but like, the industry at large is like hoping for something to lift, you know, like for a rising tide to lift all boats. And, you know, I just don't think this movie is going to do that.
Yeah.
But I think it can do enough to justify its own existence. For sure. I think that I've seen a ton of people talking about, you know, luckily like Disney's been smart. They've got all the most recent Apes trilogy, like on the home tiles of Hulu and Disney Plus, like they're trying to get people to, you know, invest in checking this thing out. So mm-hmm. I think I should be getting critical word of mouth sometime in the next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine if it's as good as it looks, then, you know, it could, that this one I could see lagging out.
Okay. So as we're going through here, Ryan, I would love it if you could, you know, flag these movies as we're going and just say like, yeah, I think this is going to be like a big one, like one of the biggest movies of the summer. We don't have to come up with like an official, you know, here are the 10 movies that we think might break out or whatever, but just like along the way, as we're in conversation.
Fair
here,
enough. Yeah. So I think
that jumps out to you.
I think if this one goes very well, like if this goes at the top end of how well it could go, this could be in that like top 10. You know, well, it top 10 for sure because of the summer, but like, you know, could be one of those ones that breaks out. Fall Guy, I'm less optimistic about just because I've stopped giving faith to the movie going public. like Monkey Man really bummed me out. Like that was one that, like, you know, and Abigail a little more recently, and Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, like some of these movies that are good movies that just have not caught on, like I'm starting, you know, so I think that you're almost reliant on that franchise thing at this point.
Yeah. Okay. So the next weekend is May 17th. And there's, by my count, four releases that, that could be, you know, interesting to talk about here. So that you've got John Krasinski's If starring Ryan Reynolds. You've got Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic. You've got The Strangers Chapter One, directed by Rennie Harlan. And then I Saw the TV Glow, which is by Jane Schoenbrunn, who directed a really fascinating film called We're All Going to the World's Fair a couple of years ago. I Saw the TV Glow is definitely going to be I mean, kind of like a drop in the bucket, like barely worth talking about financial wise. It's a much smaller movie than a lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about on the rest of this episode. But I did want to shout that out because A, it has a great trailer. B, Schoenbrunn's most recent movie was just really fascinating. And C, I just hope, you know, some people who care about stuff beyond blockbusters seek this one out. So we don't even really have to get into its prospects or anything. I just wanted to mention it here. But I'm curious what you think about the other three, If, Back to Black, and Strangers Chapter One.
I guess let's talk about If first. This one's an interesting case. John Krasinski has become an oddly popular filmmaker. You know, the Quiet Place movies did exceedingly well. But this is a more expensive, family-friendly, non-franchise film. And I'm truly non-animated. I am struggling to find a comp for this. Maybe the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, but that is a franchise movie. But I think that like the idea of like live action coupled with some CGI animation that is aimed at like family audiences, I think Sonic is maybe the closest. And, you know, those movies are somewhat in the $400 million range, you know, give or take. So I think that, you know, that's maybe one of our better comps here. And the current tracking for If is good. I think the most recent numbers I saw were 40-ish opening weekend, which, you know, for a movie with no franchise hook would be great. And then if word of mouth is good and, you know, you can tap into that like Kung Fu Panda, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, Elemental audience that can help a family friendly movie leg out even with a small-ish debut. I think that could be good. You know, that would be good news for this movie. That would be this working. Luckily, Paramount is very committed to theatrical. They're going to keep this thing in theaters for a while. They're not going to rush it to VOD. But this is a bit of an unknown for me this summer. You know, it could, you know, could do like 150 worldwide if things go bad. It could do 500 worldwide if things go great. It's one of those ones where there's like a frustratingly huge range of where it could fall.
Yeah, and I wonder about the Ryan Reynolds of it all too, because like obviously he's super popular for the Deadpool stuff, but like what was that movie, The Adam Project on Netflix? That was apparently like a big deal when that came out, you know, if you're to believe the numbers that Netflix released on that. So it seems like, you know, people just like him across the board. He's one of those guys that, like, you know, I think a lot of people who are like actually deeply embedded in the movie community and care a lot about films may have stronger opinions on Ryan Reynolds than just the average moviegoer. But the average moviegoer seems to really enjoy him. So, you know, whether that translates into box office success, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But
yeah, that's the thing. And I think that certainly helps because, you know, he was a factor in getting Detective Pikachu to, you know, what it got to. My question here is, of course, you know, the budget, like, which I'm not super sure what they spent on it yet. I'm praying against all hope that it was under $100 million. Like, yeah. I don't know, but I'd love it at like $75 million, but I'm worried it's more than that. So we'll see.
Okay, let's talk about Strangers Chapter One. What do you think about this one?
It's another one of those like unknowns. Like, I don't think the Strangers is like a strong enough franchise. Like, I don't think people are like, oh wow, the Strangers, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that that's what's going to do it. And like the original Strangers was a solid hit. Like it's, you know, there's a reason Lionsgate's doing this. It made 82 worldwide against a $9 million budget. But, and you know, I think people need to understand that Lionsgate made three of these movies back to back to back. All three of them have already been filmed. So they're committed to like Strangers Chapter 1, Strangers Chapter 2, Strangers Chapter 3. So I would guess that they were able to get the budget down like per movie by doing all three of them like that. Which helps. So, you know, you have a trilogy at the end of the day, but if the first one doesn't work, it hardly matters. You know, I think your this working extremely well would be like Black Phone numbers, right? You know, 161 worldwide, you know, as far as like your opening goes, you know, Black Phone opened to 23 million domestic, ended up at 90. That would be this working really, really well. You know, if it doesn't do that, you know, I think this could be one of those movies that, you know, maybe like does Thanksgiving numbers like 42 worldwide, you know, like that would be this not working very well.
Yeah, I was trying to look ahead to like all of the horror, the mainstream sort of blockbuster-ish horror movies that we have coming up this summer. So you've got Tarot, you've got this, I don't necessarily want to like spoil the rest of our conversation, but there's only a few more. Like The Watchers is one. Quiet Place Day One is kind of on the edge of like horror.
A Quiet Place Day One is definitely going to play for that horror crowd. So like, yeah.
And like, I mean, there's one other one that I want to save. And like, I guess you could call Alien Romulus
Sure. That plays that for the horror kind of crowd, like for sure.
So, but like really beyond that, there's not much, you know? So I wonder if like, I don't know, horror has just been such a big talking point over the past couple of years where people have realized like, hey, this is a really consistent thing that people can make money on. So I wonder like if The Strangers Chapter One is going to have more of that like direct to video vibe to it, you know, where it just kind of like ultimately becomes like a forgotten kind of thing, or if this is something that the horror community is really going to latch on to. So I guess
This one could be very review dependent, right? Like if the buzz is good, I mean, like horror is one of the few genres that's a little bit like critic proof in some ways. Like if people want to see something bad enough, they're gonna go. But it also like sometimes doesn't benefit from, like Abigail didn't benefit particularly mm-hmm. much from, which is disappointing, but it happens.
Yeah.
So, but if this one, like, no, it's, you know, really good or whatever, like, we'll see. I don't know. I think it works as good counter programming on this weekend. It has enough space from some of the other big genre movies we'll be talking about. So it can own a few weeks, which is good.
Yeah.
But yeah, then Back to Black is the other. I've written a little bit about that. That movie's off to a decent start overseas. You know, it opened in like the UK and Ireland and did well. I wrote a piece about that. You know, I think like, you know, this working is sort of like maybe Rocket Man numbers. You know, that's because I don't think this is not Bohemian Rhapsody. It's not even Elvis, mm-hmm. you know, it's not going to do that. But I think like Rocket Man, you know, getting to 195 worldwide, $25 million opening, $40 million budget, like that would be this working.
Yeah, maybe 200 on the top end of things for this one.
Yeah, and that would be at the very top end, I would think. So, but, you know, on that weekend, I don't know if it does 25. I think maybe it does 10, 15, and maybe it legs out. But I also think the international numbers could be higher on that one. So, you know, we'll see. I think if that one gets to 100 million worldwide, I think Focus would be thrilled. You know, and that would be like if that gets to 100, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right. So Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga is the next one that I'm very interested in personally. I mean, what can you say about what this movie might do in comparison to Fury Road? Because Fury Road is a movie that has like an excellent reputation, has all these Oscar nominations, but maybe is not quite the, you know, full-throated hit that some people might have sort of ascribed it to being because of its cultural reputation. So remind us how Fury Road did, and then what do you think about this one?
You explained that better than I could have. Like, yeah, Fury Road has this insane reputation, you know, 10 Oscar nominations, I think, what, 5 or 6 wins, you know, maybe one of the best teaser trailers of all time, one of the most highly regarded action movies of all time, quite possibly the most roundly beloved mainstream blockbuster of the last 10 years. Like, it, you know, its reputation is such. But we're talking about a movie that had $150 million budget, a huge marketing spend, and made $379 million worldwide. Under most circumstances, that is not a success. Mm-hmm. The reason we haven't gotten Edge of Tomorrow 2 is because it did similar numbers. You know, like, but this movie got 10 Academy Award nominations and made a ton of money after the fact. That's why. But Furiosa, I can tell you even from looking at the trailers, it's probably not going to end up in that same, I don't think it's getting 10 Academy Award nominations. You know what I mean? Like something even just from that trailer tells me, I don't think we're in that territory again. And I also think it's more expensive. My understanding is that it's closer to $200 million.
Wow. Are you serious? I was going to say, part of the reason that Fury Road, I imagine that budget would have been sort of inflated, was because that movie went through such a long development process that, like, you know, anytime a movie sits in development or goes through a bunch of different versions and stuff like that on its way to the big screen, that money just adds up and that gets dumped into its final, you know, budget total. And that can kind of sometimes make a movie seem more expensive than it actually would have been. So I would have thought that maybe Furiosa could have comparatively kept the price down a little bit compared to Fury Road, but it sounds like that's not the case. So that's a kind of a bummer.
No, I'm not positive. The official budget has not been reported, but I've seen and heard, I can't say much, but I have it has been suggested to me that the budget is in the $200 million range.
Wow.
Now, that might be also, now, one thing that you need to keep in mind, that might be before tax incentives and stuff. And then after that kicks in, that gets you down. Like, that's why the Godzilla X Kong budget came down to, like, 135. So, like, who knows? Maybe, I'm hoping that's what's going on here. We'll see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, so, I think, obviously, Warner Brothers made this movie with the hope that this could play, like, a breakout sequel. Like, this could almost be, like, Avatar 2 type thing, right? Where people have waited so long to see the sequel or prequel, whatever, to Fury Road, that like it can do bigger numbers than the original did. Mm-hmm. And I think that like it is important. I know we don't want to like talk over each other here, but like the Garfield movie also comes out this weekend. That is completely playing for a different audience.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not running over anything there. And, you know, If and The Strangers, like those aren't playing for the same audience. So this will be the first like legitimate blockbuster in 2 weeks, because, you know, so Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes can own that like sort of corridor for a couple of weekends. And, you know, then Furiosa comes along. I think reception is going to be huge here. I forget which isn't this playing at a big film festival here before its release? Am I mistaken?
Oh, is it? Interesting. It might be.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I thought I'd heard that. But so look, we'll see. I'm not so sure. Like you know, it's one of those ones where I'm a little like the one part of me, there's the part of me like that thinks of this like I did Top Gun Maverick before it came out, where I'm like, I just don't know if anyone wants, like, yeah, I'm not sure. And then that movie made $1.5 billion. Like, mm-hmm. So, you know, like I'm not the best prognosticator. And I say that every once in a while as I sort of muse my way through some of these things. Like, can it do Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 numbers? You know, can it be that this summer? Can it do, you know, 567 worldwide? Can it open to 54 domestic? You know, can it do 172 domestic by the end of its run? I think so, if things go very well. What is this not going well? You know, something in like the Hunger Games Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, right? Like, that might be this not going well. You know, 337 worldwide, you know, $44 million opening, and then kind of tumbles from there. Like that would be this on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes any lower than that, I would be fearful, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think your absolute floor would be like 300 worldwide. Like if this just somehow people just don't show up, don't care, very top end would be like 600 worldwide in my eyes, but we'll
see. Okay. All right. What about the Garfield movie?
I mean, obviously, I think like your big hope of hope there is that you have Chris Pratt in another animated movie about a icon. So, you know, like Sony's like, let's get a $1 billion hit, guys. But like, that's obviously not what's going to happen. It's not going to do Mario Brothers movie numbers. But animated movies have lagged out. You know, we've seen, you know, Kung Fu Panda 4. We've seen Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, like open to relatively small numbers, but like leg out in a big way. Migration ended up making about $300 million worldwide after a very small opening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Garfield could be this really helpful movie this summer where maybe it doesn't open huge on May 24th, but it probably is going to leg out. It's got a little bit of competition in that, like, If is probably playing for the same market. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of strictly family-friendly animated movies go, that could be in a good spot. And I think there's an outside shot that, like, Garfield ends up opening higher than Furiosa. You know, and I think that even happened, like, when Mad Max came out. What was it? Yeah, I think it was Pitch Perfect 2 opened that same weekend and opened higher than Mad Max.
Wow. I did not remember that.
Yeah. And nobody does. Right. Like, but you know, so like, I think we could be in a similar situation here.
It's interesting because like you've got Inside Out 2 coming up in the middle of June. We'll get to that in a second, but that seems like the, you know, the family friendly, like bring your kids to the movies kind of thing on paper. But then when you think about it for a second, like Inside Out 2 is more about like this grown up, female protagonist, and then you've got, yes, the same, you know, or some of the same and a new cast of emotions and things like that. What I'm trying to say is like that movie is Pixar's actual big play this year, but it seems like it could play to a slightly older crowd than like the, you know, let's bring my 5-year-old to the movies kind of thing, which I think Garfield would definitely, you know, benefit from that kind of approach or whatever, like is going to be the beneficiary of that kind of thinking. And then Despicable Me 4 doesn't come out until early July. So like maybe Garfield has like essentially the entire month of June to capture that audience before Despicable Me 4 comes along and potentially like eats its lunch. But I don't know. I was wondering how much of a threat you thought Inside Out 2 might be.
Pixar is tricky right now because, like, I mean, I think after Elemental opened last year, I was, like, ready to be like, well, Pixar might be done as a theatrical brand. You know, like, because it opened, you know, bad. Like, there's no getting around it. Elemental, and you know, Pixar had a bad couple of years of putting stuff direct to Disney Plus, and Bob Iger even addressed that as a mistake. But Inside Out, a $200 million or Elemental, I'm sorry, Elemental, a $200 million, you know, animated movie, only opened to $29 million. But it legged out to $154 domestic, ended up making $496 worldwide. And that shows you in the pandemic era how leggy these animated movies can be. So I think Inside Out 2, you know, Inside Out made a ridiculous amount of money. Like, this is like that pre-pandemic, you know, where Pixar was one of the house of ideas where you could take a high concept original idea and it could make $858 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. That's what Inside Out did. That's what Pixar was capable of. Post pandemic, you know, we haven't had a lot of, you know, sequels from them to sort of see what they can do. Like we had Lightyear, which was a spinoff, and that flamed out badly.
Yeah.
So I don't think Inside Out 2 is going to be subject to that, but I think that to think that it would also do $858 million worldwide at this point is a pipe dream. But I do think it could do Elemental numbers. I do think it could potentially get to, you know, that $500 million worldwide area, and, you know, yeah, maybe like $30 million opening or something. I would say that it probably does higher than that because it's not dealing with as much direct competition. But I think that yes, that's going to get in the way of Garfield a little bit, but your really young kids can go to Garfield. Your super young kids, maybe not Inside Out 2. So that's a little bit, it is an odd situation for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's try to burn through June here. We've got a Bad Boys Ride or Die on June 7th. I think Bad Boys for Life was the highest grossing movie of 2020. Is that correct?
It was, because it was the last big movie to open in theaters before the pandemic. There were other movies, but yeah, it ended up making $426 million worldwide, $62 million opening. I do think that if things go well, this movie could do like almost identical numbers. That's kind of what I'm kind of predicting. Like sort of like Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire did like almost dollar for dollar the same. Like I think we could be looking at that same situation here.
Okay.
Assuming the reviews are good, which I think is, you know, that's the, you know, because people really liked Bad Boys for Life, and I think that could be the similar situation.
All right, what do you think about The Watchers, which also opens on June 7th? This is M. Night Shyamalan's daughter directing the movie about Dakota Fanning as an artist, the artist who goes out and gets trapped in the Irish forest, and you've probably seen the trailers by now, but what do you think about this one?
This is one I'm actually a little high on. I think that you know, on your very optimistic end, this could be like Smile, you know, where like this could be like one of those breakout debut horror movies with a really good hook. You know, you got Shyamalan's name in there. So, you know, Smile, just for context, did $22 million opening weekend, ended up 105, basically 106 domestic and 217 worldwide. That would be The Watchers like really working. I think even if it does 100 worldwide, like Warner Brothers would be stoked. And I think that'll play well against Bad Boys Ride or Die. It's the only game in town since The Strangers Chapter 1, which I think has an outside shot of not performing particularly well. So people could be ready for a big, good horror movie with a twist and all that stuff. So I think that one, I think, could be like a sleeper hit this summer.
The director's name is Ishana Knight Shyamalan, so I want to put some respect on her name. I just called her M. Night Shyamalan's daughter before, but, you know,
we should
actual name
indeed
deserves to be spoken. So
we should indeed put some respect on her name. Yeah, because I will say that trailer looks awesome, so I'm into it.
Okay, so we talked about Inside Out 2. That's June 14th. June 21st, I have The Bike Riders down, the movie that Tom Hardy is in, Austin Butler is in. Do you have this one for that date on your calendar still? That
you're looking at? I do. Okay. And this is a weird situation because this was originally supposed to be like a Disney release. And, you know, like they just basically were like, we don't want it. And Focus picked it up. And this is like what Focus does. But I think its prospects are limited, you know, like this is not, I just don't see this being like $100 million movie, you know, worldwide. Like I see this being more, boy, like I'm struggling to, you know, look at like a, I mean, I don't want to be too down on it, but I fear this might not perform particularly well.
Yeah. Do you know, is there a way for you to look up Jeff Nichols and like the most money that a movie of his has
Indeed
ever made?
I can, sir.
So this is, Jeff Nichols is the guy behind movies like Take Shelter and Midnight Special and Mud.
Real quickly, for anyone that has not watched Midnight Special, I implore you to go watch Midnight Special. I believe it is streaming on Max right now. Great movie. But yeah, he doesn't make movies that make a lot of money.
Yeah. He's an excellent director and I love his movies, but like you said, they're just not necessarily like traditional blockbuster material.
So Jeff Nichols' highest grossing movie is Mud with $31.5 million worldwide.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I would rather not explain to you how much Take Shelter or Midnight Special made because it depresses me, but
well, those were, yeah.
but yeah. So The Bike Riders I think is certainly the most commercial movie that he's made. It's, you know, I think Austin Butler is a legitimate movie star. Tom Hardy is absolutely has been a movie star for a long time. Jodie Comer, I believe, is right there as well, as far as like, you know, new Hollywood, you know, potential A-listers go. But, none of them like Austin Butler actually a bit at this point is cementing himself as a box office draw, but, I don't know. I think it's a weird week. I think it's like, it's like the one weekend this summer where we just don't have something huge opening. Mm-hmm. So it might benefit from that. But I mean, 10 million opening weekend would probably be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so
we're not looking at it as like a dynamic changer or anything like
we
that.
We are not.
Okay. So what do you think about Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter One, Kevin Costner's new Western? We're going to talk about both parts here over the course of the next couple months as we get into them. But what do you think about the prospects of this big sprawling Western that he's cooked up?
I am concerned that this could be the biggest bomb of the year.
Really? I was just thinking like, man, Yellowstone is like such a big deal. This seems like this is the one that's going to get all the dads out of the house and people are going to be like, yeah, Kevin Costner, that was my America, like
now,
the 90s.
But I think the budget for each of these movies is in like the $100 million range. I mean, I think they're really expensive movies. Like, so, and my understanding is that Kevin Costner put most of his own money into this and like partnered with Warner Brothers for like distribution and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, so it looks like the budget was $100 million for Chapter 1 and 2, I guess.
Those are the only ones that have been completed right now.
Those are the only ones that have been completed. Okay, so that gives me a little... Okay, so I did see that $100 million number, but that's for two movies. Okay. I feel slightly better about that. That having been said, Westerns are not something that get made all that often on the scale anymore. And they don't, you know, it's been a while since one broke out big. I just don't know. I am hoping because I saw a bunch of footage at CinemaCon. I think it looks incredible. I think it looks great. But I think, as we're going to talk about here in a second, it's going right up against A Quiet Place Day One. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, those Quiet Place movies both made a bunch of money. I think that trailer plays really well. It's definitely going to be a crowd pleaser. So I think that it's going to be overshadowed by that. And then, you know, does it have the juice to sort of hang around as these other things start coming out in July? I do not know.
Yeah.
I will eat my hat if I'm wrong about it being a bomb. I hope it's not, but I'm concerned that this might be the one that gets lost this summer.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we'll come back around and talk about Chapter Two momentarily. Tell me about Quiet Place Day One, and then we'll take a break. So, what do you think about Lupita Nyong'o leading this new, I guess, prequel of these movies? And you mentioned the first two performed very well. So, what do you think about this one?
This is one. My only concern is how much Paramount spent on it. It looks much bigger than the first two movies, and I fear that they might have overextended a bit. Now, just in terms of raw dollars and cents, A Quiet Place Part Two opened to $47 million in May 2021, and that was sort of during like the pandemic still. It legged out to $160 domestic and $137 internationally for just $297 worldwide. And again, that was 2021, much different circumstances. So I think we could easily see something in a similar range, you know, somewhere between a $40 and $50 million opening weekend, legs out from there on, could easily get to $300 worldwide. So that's kind of, I wouldn't be surprised if it plays similar to Part Two.
Okay. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about July and August.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it?
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram. Now.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck and check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Ryan, let's get into it. Despicable Me 4, I mean, I asked you to flag some of the biggest movies of the summer, potentially. And
I will just say it right now. I think this has a real shot at being the highest grossing movie worldwide of the year.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, these movies just like make bank. That is what they do. It is unbelievable how much money these films make.
Can I offer some content? Because there are a lot of people that are probably listeners of this podcast that don't have kids that are like, who cares? Well, let me tell you who cares. To date, the Despicable Me franchise, counting the Minion films, has made $4.64 billion worldwide. The original Despicable Me, $544 million, and that is the lowest grossing entry in the franchise. Despicable Me 3 made $1 billion. Minions made $1.1 billion. Minions The Rise of Gru in 2022 made $939. These movies make money. We're looking at, even on the low end, if this movie quote unquote flops within this franchise, it makes its way to $600 million worldwide. So
yeah,
it's one of the highest grossing movies of the year.
And most of the other big studio releases kind of cleared out because they know that this movie is just going to dominate for a little while.
Yep.
The only thing that I have listed kind of in its orbit still is on, I believe it's July 5th, Maxine, the third entry in Ty West's trilogy, which started with X and then was followed up by Pearl. It was a couple years ago. And now the third movie is coming out. I'm really looking forward to this personally. This is another one that is like pretty small and is not going to be like a major player at the box office this summer. But that is like obviously totally different energy and audience than Despicable Me 4. So I guess it makes sense as a piece of counter programming to slot in there.
The only thing I will say about Maxine is that people have caught up with X and Pearl now. And, you know, those movies are made for almost nothing and they did relatively okay. I wouldn't be surprised if Maxine like makes a lot more than X and Pearl did. Just because I think people have caught up with those two movies now. And mm-hmm. I also think that Maxine trailer plays great. So
yeah, definitely.
So we'll see there, but.
Okay. So July 12th, we have Fly Me to the Moon. This is the movie that I don't think we talked about it on the podcast yet, but the trailer is out there. It's Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum, as like people in the 1960s during the space race. And there's, they basically have to like fake the moon landing just in case it doesn't work. It's like a rom-com kind of thing. I don't know. This seems like the type of movie that would have gotten made in the 90s and would have just been like a dime a dozen. Like, oh yeah, get, you know, two movie stars, throw them together and we'll call it a day. And like that, you know, we used to get movies like this all the time. This movie now just feels like such an outlier given the cinematic landscape that we've experienced over the past few years. So what do you think about this one as almost as like a throwback to an era long past?
Yeah, I for one love the premise of this movie. I think you have two big movie stars in it. This is another one of those ones that like if it goes very well, you know, it could surprise us all. I think The Lost City remains one of my biggest surprises of the pandemic era. Which starred Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock. Again, another two-hander. And that did 105 domestic, and it ended up at basically 193 worldwide, you know, against a $30 million domestic opening. I don't know if Fly Me to the Moon has that same, like, angle to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll get that same level of pop. I don't know what they spent on it, but like, you know, I think like the absolute roof for it would be, you know, Lost City numbers. I am skeptical of it getting that far. But you know, I think like if it goes very poorly, you could be looking at maybe Asteroid City numbers, you know, Wes Anderson, which was like 53 worldwide, which was like good for Wes Anderson, bad for a movie that probably cost as much money as they spent on this. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Okay. So that's July 12th. And then July 19th is Twisters. And I'm so curious about this because like Twister was a big movie in the 90s. And like, you know, that was more of the monoculture time. Like everybody's attention spans weren't as fractured. That movie, like, sort of captured the imagination. That had a great trailer, the whole thing with the cow flying through the, you know, the CG cow and the tornado and all that. Like, it was a movie that had iconography. So I feel like, and it was also like one of the first big DVDs, if I remember correctly. It was sort of like right around that era. So, you know, there's like, it's in the public consciousness in a way that a lot of movies just aren't. So the idea of trying to capitalize on that in a modern context, introducing Glenn Powell and a whole new cast of characters and like not really playing up any connections at all to the previous movie in the marketing. I don't know whether they exist in the story, other than just like, hey, remember Twister? Now we're adding an S and there are multiple tornadoes this time around. So it's just a really, really interesting sort of gambit here. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think it's worth remembering how big of a hit Twister was in 1996. $92 million budget, which was just gargantuan at that time. I mean, that is just as big as movies got at that time. $41 million opening, which was massive, you know, because these are unadjusted for inflation numbers. $494 million worldwide in 1996. Again, unadjusted for inflation, just an unmitigated success train. And it's a movie that has hung around. Like, it still plays on cable to this day. So it's made a bunch of money. I kind of think it's smart to not play up the connection to a movie a lot of younger people might not even know, but the people that do know, it's like nodding enough at them where you're like, oh, hell yeah. And I think, you know, you have Glenn Powell has absolutely asserted himself as a movie star. I think you have a good supporting cast there. This is one where I am wildly concerned about what they spent on it. I still don't know what the budget is, but I'm nervous because they are depending on this sort of playing like Top Gun Maverick. You know what I mean? Like where people are super stoked about a movie 30 years later that is connected to the thing they liked. This one does not have Tom Cruise in it, so I don't know. I think if this movie makes like what the original made worldwide, that would be a win, like somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 worldwide. But I think anything less than like 350 worldwide, and this is like an unmitigated disaster because of what they probably spent on it. So
yeah, I was just looking on Wikipedia, and there's something that claims that the budget is $200 million, but it's behind a paywall for an article at the Oklahoman. So I'm guessing like, you know, that was part of where they filmed it or something, and maybe somebody heard something there. I'm not sure about the
well, but that also could be. I don't know what the tax incentives are in Oklahoma, but you know, that could be again a pre-tax incentive figure. So but even so, I'm guessing this is no less than $150 million movie. It looks very expensive. So
yeah, I hope it turns out to be really good, man. I'm just like,
I do too. I love Daisy Edgar Jones. I think I love Glenn Powell. Like and it looks fun. It looks like a fun movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it's just one of those ones where you're sort of counting on an old school blockbuster to pay off.
Yeah, I hope this one gets like really good word of mouth. The problem, though, that we'll get to right now is that the next weekend is July 26th, and that's Deadpool and Wolverine. And that is another one of those movies that I feel like I feel comfortable in saying it's going to be one of the biggest movies of the summer, if not the year. It's going to be a movie that eats up a lot of attention, and it just has like such a wide swath of people who are interested in it, even if, you know, there's been so many conversations about superhero fatigue and all that kind of stuff. I feel like this is going to be one of those ones that's just kind of like immune to all of that stuff. It's immune to everything because it got Hugh Jackman back as Wolverine, and then the Deadpool movies are like beloved for what they are. So and once again, you've got the Ryan Reynolds of it all that we talked about earlier. So
yeah, there's no question this is one of our top grossers of the year. I think I've seen a fair amount of footage from this at CinemaCon. I've sensed a turning of the tide in our circles. Like people are just worn out on the Wolverine thing, the Deadpool thing. People are worn out on the superhero stuff. So there's like a lot of negativity in like film Twitter for this. Your average moviegoer, I guarantee you, is not feeling that. Like people are pumped for this.
Yeah.
This is one of the only guaranteed $100 million plus opening weekends of the summer. I think it probably at least matches the worldwide gross of Deadpool 2, which was at $786 million, which, fun fact, is against all odds Brad Pitt's highest grossing movie of all time, because he is technically in the movie. That is one of my weirdest things that I've discovered in doing this job.
That's so cheap.
Isn't it? I wrote a whole thing. It was an episode. Please go look at my Tales from the Box Office column on that. But yeah, so it is so cheap, but it is technically true. But yeah, so I think that like, people keep wanting this to be a billion-dollar grosser, and I'm not saying that's impossible, but I think that this probably more realistically is closer to Deadpool 2 numbers with an outside shot of getting closer to a billion, but maybe not cracking it, but then maybe being one of the top three highest grossing movies of the year. That's what I would say.
All right, so let's burn through August real quick because we're running a little bit long here. So we've got Harold and the Purple Crayon on August 2nd. I mean, I just have like negative interest in this, like not even zero, just like negative interest. So
or
I don't know.
Zachary Levi, man, like talk about going from like Shazam to like the past few things he's done. And like, cause I'm with you. I don't think anyone is interested in this movie. Like even the audience that it's aimed at, like, I do not know what's going on here. Yeah. This is one that's been, hasn't this been done for like a long time?
I think so. I want to say they finished it like a couple years ago or something. Yeah, that filming took place around the beginning of 2022. So, yeah, it's been a little while.
This is one I'm, again, with a live action CGI movie, it's, you can only make them so cheaply. So I don't know what they spent on this, but there is just no buzz on this one whatsoever. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So I again, you talk about things that I think could like flop and flop hard this year. I don't like to be mean. I don't like to pick on things. I think this is, you're looking at one of them right here.
Yeah. So speaking of things that actually do have good buzz, Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie starring Josh Hartnett, comes out the following weekend, which is August 9th.
Yes.
This is going to be going up against Borderlands. So what do you think about these two?
Trap was, of everything I saw at CinemaCon, the trailer has since dropped, but I saw that before it dropped, and I was trying to relay to you guys, like, holy crap, this looks cool. And I think luckily that it wasn't just like the buzz in that room. People seem really behind this one.
Yeah.
And there's a reason Warner Brothers signed Shyamalan to that deal, is because ever since he stopped doing big franchise movies, he's been a reliable bet. You know, Knock at the Cabin was the movie that dethroned Avatar 2 at the box office. So, you know, like, I think that Trap is well positioned. You know, probably, I'm looking at what his last few movies have done, and I'm wondering, you know, and again, I think reception is important, right? Like, you know, with Shyamalan's movies in particular. But I think what's interesting is he has built up such a reputation now of, like, just curiosity, mm-hmm. that even a movie like Old that wasn't exceptionally well received still made $89 million worldwide. So I think that, like, that's certainly on the table here, but, like, if things go exceedingly well, let us not forget that Split did 278 worldwide, you know, wow. And that was before no one knew that that was connected to Unbreakable. That was just marketed as a movie on its own terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Visit made just shy of 100 worldwide. So I think, you know, Trap could, it shouldn't have a problem getting to 100 if it's even remotely good. But, you know, if you can somehow get to that pre-pandemic, like, Split level of excitement, who knows?
Yeah, that would rule. Borderlands has just been, like, you know, it's had such a stink on it because of all the reshoots and the director changing and all that kind of stuff. But the trailer kind of makes it seem like none of that matters. And I think for people who don't follow this stuff closely, you never really know that watching the trailer, which makes it just look like a big sort of a Guardians of the Galaxy-esque riff. So what do you think about the prospects of this one?
I think this movie working would be Sonic the Hedgehog numbers, and not to use that again as like a, it's not Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not making 800 million worldwide. It's just not. But I think that, like, if it can somehow avoid, like, critical disaster, you know, the first Sonic the Hedgehog did about 320 worldwide. I think that would be this working. I think, it not working is, you know, worse, you know, like, I'm not super sure of how low this one could go. I think it gets a certain level of interest just because it is within, you know, maybe it's like Madam Web, right? Like, it's 100 million worldwide movie. Like, maybe that's like the bottom end for this one.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be kind of my look there. So that could, in theory, be a good weekend where you have Trap probably being the top movie if it's received well, and then Borderlands kind of on its tail at number two. So you have two movies that combined, maybe, let's say, you know, bring $80 million worth of ticket sales.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that seems promising to me. All right, I think we only have four movies to talk about left. Alien Romulus is the next weekend, which is August 16th. That's going up against Horizon Chapter 2. So what do you think about these two?
What's interesting is I think that Alien Romulus is probably going to be a big hit, but only because it's probably made a lot cheaper than Alien Covenant was. So Alien Covenant cost $97 million before marketing, and it made $240 worldwide, basically $241, $74 domestic. I think if this movie does Alien Covenant numbers, it's going to be considered a success, which is interesting. Mm. And I actually think that's probably where it'll end up. If I were to guess, it'd probably be close to that. But Disney knew not to spend $100 million on an Alien movie again. So, and I also think it's different because this was originally supposed to only go to Hulu. That was what it was made, like, under the guise of. But I think that, as we've talked about before, they saw the buzz on Prey, which went directly to Hulu. And I know that there were circumstances that dictated that. I don't think Disney's ever doing that again.
Yeah.
So I think that this is a movie that, you know, it benefits from both being horror and kind of a big franchise thing. So that's one that I would look at as, like, maybe one of the sleepers. I know it's weird to call an Alien movie a sleeper, but people were not super high on Covenant. So I would consider that a slight sleeper movie of the summer, perhaps.
Okay. So do you think Horizon Chapter 2 is just going to be, like, way worse than Chapter 1? Because you were thinking Chapter 1 might end up being just a straight up bomb, right?
What's fascinating here is we've never had a situation like this that I can recall where the chapter two or sequel to a movie comes out literally like what, like 2 months later? And so, okay, is that enough time for, let's say the first one doesn't do exceptionally well in theaters, but is Warner Brothers going to ensure that in that 2 month window, it makes it to VOD and or streams on Max so people can catch up with it before the second one comes out? Is that enough time for that?
I say no because way.
Right. And that's my thing. So you're relying on only the retention from Horizon Chapter One.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, if the first one doesn't do really well, I think your odds of getting more people out for Chapter Two are, you know, obviously low. And I think getting the exact same people to show up again, who knows? We'll see. But yeah, so that one is one I'm especially opening against Alien, especially a week after Trap. It could be rough.
The upside to this, Ryan, as I see it, is maybe this is the movie, this is the franchise that gets people who haven't come back to the theaters yet since the pandemic to come back. Like I said, you know, older audiences who loved Kevin Costner stuff from back in the day. And like, maybe they're just like fully on board with this and they would be willing to go to the movies, not once, but twice in a season. Whereas, you know, maybe since the pandemic, that would just like not be in their interest set anymore or something.
I completely agree. This working is me looking stupid in a few months and this being, and I hope that's true. Please snip this, say it for the record. I hope I look like an idiot. Because I want these things to succeed. I want all these, like, I don't like it when movies fail because it's not good for anybody. I am not rooting for anything to fail. Like, so yeah, I want to look dumb. I want those same people that made Top Gun Maverick an unexpectedly huge success to show up for this. And I think you're right. I am just still nervous about the experiment because it is very hard to market an original movie anyway. Marketing two of them back to back is a Herculean task.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful, but we'll see.
Okay, so the last two movies that I have on my list, and please let me know if there's anything that I missed or that you might have on this final weekend in August, which is August 23rd, it looks like, is The Crow and then Blink Twice, which is, I think it's Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut. Yes. I just saw the trailer for this debut not too long ago, and Channing Tatum is in this one too. So I guess we got like a summer of Tatum or something in some ways.
A little bit.
Yeah, with that and Fly Me to the Moon. So it's like a murder mystery type of thing, like very...
Looks fun.
Yeah, like sexy, mysterious, kind of fun movie. So that is very different than the like ultra dark, violent version of The Crow that's coming out. Honestly, like I'm shocked. We've talked about this before, but I'm shocked that this version of The Crow is even seeing the light of day, given how long it's been in development. I mean, this has been
indeed
like a long, long, long time coming. I personally have like zero interest in it, so it's just going to like come and go as far as I'm concerned. But I am curious about what you think its prospects are, given the talent that it has involved.
Yeah, so I think Blink Twice, just to real quick knock that one out, I think that's like an Amazon MGM movie. They're not necessarily relying on it to profit solely in theaters. I think anywhere between, it could 10, 12 million opening weekend, something like that would probably be fine. You know, and then it can leg out a little bit as summer winds down, and, you know, that would be a nice little win for them. If it does anything more, great. I think The Crow is fascinating. I think, like, it's a franchise, yes, but it's not one that has been successful in 30 years. The sequels were not successful, and, you know, there's a reason this has been a hard reboot to get off the ground. I will say the footage is exceptionally violent, like, weirdly sexy in, like, a gothy sort of way. I know a lot of people are, like, ragging on the look of it, but I sort of see the marketing pitch there, like... So I think like this really working is John Wick Chapter 2 numbers, like 30 million domestic opening, 92 domestic finish, 171 worldwide. Like that would be Lionsgate very happy with this. I think less happy is John Wick Chapter 1 numbers, you know, which has you, you know, topping out at 86 worldwide, you know, and with like a $14 million opening. I think it probably falls somewhere between those two. How far on either side of the line, I'm not super sure yet, but
yeah,
that's my guess. And I guess before we move, you know, you said those are our last two movies. We did mention up top that Kraven the Hunter moved. Kraven the Hunter was originally August 30th, which was the last weekend of August. we kind of needed that movie there.
Because there's nothing else there, right?
There's nothing else there. So I wouldn't be surprised if this release calendar shuffles a little bit. You know, like maybe one of these movies moves a week or two that we've talked about, like Horizon moving 2 weeks to August 30th might make sense. Mm-hmm. Because then that gives you a couple more weeks for a VOD window, possibly. You have less competition directly. But the only problem with that is that Warner Brothers says Beetlejuice coming out on September 6th. So I don't know. But yeah, I do think it sucks now that the last weekend of summer is like absolutely nothing coming out. There is Reagan, which was a biopic about Ronald Reagan, I believe, that was advertised at CinemaCon that I got a hat for. I don't think that's not going to be a big winner there, but so I wouldn't be shocked if something shifts into that August 30th window. I would be more shocked if something doesn't, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So I think the best case scenario for me would either be one of those September 13th movies, perhaps Transformers 1 or Speak No Evil bumps up to August 30th. That would be my hope. So,
okay. All right. So, I don't know. We just went through all these movies, Ryan. What's your takeaway from this? Like, what are you feeling like in terms of the summer? Are you like, kind of like dreading it? Are you think there's maybe some secret, movies waiting in the wings to potentially do better than people are expecting? What do you think?
I'm honestly nervous. Like, I really think that's my, like, I think it's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride. There's going to be some bright spots in there, but I also think that like Garfield and Mad Max opening the same weekend sucks. You know, like I think like we should have spread the love a little more. You and I have talked about this a bunch this year where there was those first 2 months where we're just like, there's nothing here. And, you know, like there's now like some semi crowded weekends here. And, I'm a little nervous. Like I'm nervous that on July, you know, June 21st, The Bike Riders is our big movie, you know, like I'm cautiously optimistic, but I would say emphasis on cautiously.
Okay.
So we need these movies to be good. We need people to like love them. We need them to deliver at the top end of expectations. And how often does that truly happen?
Yeah, that's the thing, is like I'm hoping that there are so many of these that turn out to be so great that they drive word of mouth that then drives, you know, more people to go to the movie and check the stuff out. So that's all we can hope for as we head into any summer season. So fingers crossed, and maybe we'll do like a debrief or something at the end of the summer as we head into fall or something like that, just like looking back and or probably in our weekly coverage we'll paint a pretty clear picture of what's going on. So all right, I think that's going to do it for today's show. You can find much more about predictions and things like that, but also like just a ton of box office coverage and all that at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.